Hey, it's Kim Masters, host of The Business at KCRW. We're going to start the podcast in just a few seconds, but first I want to ask you for your support. You are listening to this podcast for free, but guess what? It's not free to produce. So if you enjoy the show, please send us some support. Send us $10 by texting KCRW to the number 20222. One more time, text KCRW to the number 20222. Thanks so much, and here's the show. From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I so hope that the studios understand that people want to see challenging films, films which are not sort of blockbusters. And I wish they would sort of understand that they actually can make money. And that would be so healthy for the community of filmgoers, filmmakers, but also it's a different strand of revenue for them.
Director Steve McQueen explains why he believes Hollywood should take a chance on movies like 12 Years a Slave, plus his moving remembrance of the first time he saw Schindler's List. But first, our last pre-Oscar Hollywood news banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, as you know, the Olympics have been taking up pretty much all of NBC's primetime lately. The ratings have been up and down like a yo-yo. I think there's been some debate, NBC saying it's fabulous, other people looking at the numbers saying, eh, not so much. But as you know, John, this is not just about the Olympics for NBC.
Yeah, when you spend $4.4 billion, not just for this, but for the next two games that NBC has, you're obviously betting on people watching the Olympics, but you're also using the millions of people who are going to watch the programming to sample other shows, new shows that you're launching, and build a little allegiance to those shows as they launch.
So NBC hopes, and notably Jimmy Fallon. Now, you know, Jay Leno was hurried out of the Tonight Show job to make room for Jimmy Fallon in time for these Olympics. I think we could have bet that Jimmy Fallon would do a really big number regardless of when he started, because people would check it out and be curious. But the Olympics is definitely, even if the ratings aren't as great as they might have been in the past, on some nights, they definitely have been a big push for Jimmy Fallon, and the numbers have been really good.
Yeah, now, obviously, he's had a ton of big stars on, and he has the benefit of all the Olympic promotions. The question is, like 3 months out when Kurt Russell is your big name star, what happens then? You know, are people going to tune in as much when the star wattage is dimmed considerably and you don't have the NBC Olympics promotional blitz?
Yeah, obviously NBC is hoping to get especially a younger audience. You know, he's done hip-hop dancing with Will Smith and tried to do that viral thing that he's been able to do in the past, which Jay Leno admitted he cannot and did not do. So we'll see how that plays out. But John, meanwhile, this is our last banter before the big event, the Olympics of the movie world, the Oscars. So let's hash over that race a little bit. I think we feel that there are two, maybe three pictures truly in contention right now for Best Picture.
Yeah, and I'd say they are 12 Years a Slave, American Hustle, and Gravity. And we should step back. This race started at the Telluride Film Festival, Labor Day weekend last year. It's been 6 months of campaigning, talking about movies. I am so ready for the Oscars to happen. I bet you everybody who has a movie in Oscar contention is ready for the Oscar to happen. I'm actually tired of the whole thing. On with the show.
Yeah, I think they were probably tired of it by like October, but they are working very hard. So we have to give them credit for that. I would say in my little cheat sheet for my little Oscar pool, which I will not enter, I'm seeing 12 Years a Slave as the likely winner, with Gravity very much still in contention. I feel like American Hustle has faded a little bit. I don't know why. It's just that weird feeling you get in the environment. But 12 Years a Slave feels very strong to me right now as a socially relevant film. However, having said that, I feel like Alfonso Cuarón feels extra strong for Best Director, and it might be one of those split things.
I think it's very possible. And we've talked a lot about how 2013 was a great year in film. So if you're not rewarding, say, Steve McQueen for directing 12 Years a Slave and giving Alfonso Cuarón and probably cinematographer Emmanuel Lubezki the Oscar for making Gravity, it seems equitable. And in the same way, in some of the top acting categories, I can see Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto from Dallas Buyers Club winning respectively Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor. I think it becomes most interesting in the Supporting Actress category, where if Lupita Nyong'o does not win, it's quite possible 12 Years a Slave could win Best Picture and no other Oscars, which is certainly an exception to almost all Academy Award rules.
It's somewhat happened at the Globes. You know, I happened to be at a Globes viewing party sitting with a 12 Years a Slave crowd, and it was a very dark, dull night for them until Best Picture in the drama category was announced, at which point they perked up considerably. So it's not without precedent that that film get the Best Picture Award and not necessarily score in other categories.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting question is, even though these movies are critically embraced, some of them have done really well, not a huge amount of blockbusters. I think it'll be really interesting to see what the ratings are this year. Ellen DeGeneres is hosting the show. It feels like we are so tired, as I mentioned, of all the award shows. The Academy Awards have to happen earlier than the first week of March. And if they do, maybe the ratings will go up. I'm not expecting huge ratings for ABC, but unlike the Olympics, there's actually a little bit of suspense as to what's going to happen in the night.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
And that's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. You can follow us on Twitter. My handle is at Kim Masters. John is at JG Horn. Our producer, Darby Maloney, is at Darby KCRW. Coming up, filmmaker Steve McQueen. Twelve Years a Slave offers such an unflinching look at slavery that there were those in the industry who wondered whether audiences would buy tickets and even whether Oscar voters would watch a screener of the movie in the comfort of their homes. But 12 Years a Slave, made for $22 million outside the studio system, has grossed $110 million worldwide so far, and it's been embraced by critics and received important awards recognition. The film is based on the memoir of Solomon Northup, a once free black man who was kidnapped and sold into slavery in 1841. Northup is played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, who just won the BAFTA for Best Actor.
Days ago, I was with my family in my home. Now you tell me all is lost. Tell no one who I am. That's the way to survive. Well, I don't want to survive. I want to live.
Our guest today, Steve McQueen, is a British filmmaker and visual artist who lives in Amsterdam. He's been traveling the world talking about his movie ever since the film premiered last September at the Telluride Film Festival. The business contributor John Horn was there, and he's followed McQueen's story closely ever since.
Do you find yourself having the same sorts of conversations about the film? And are those conversations evolve as more people see the film and as people are interested in different aspects of its making?
Well, they evolve from day one. When our first adventure outside of the film festivals, well, we went to Orlando to the Black National Journalists Association conference. And we didn't even show the film. We showed a trailer and we had Alfie Buda, myself, and Lupita Nyong'o and Chiwetel Ejiofor. And what happened at that conference was people were talking about their own experiences regarding slavery. And it was almost like the film allowed there to be a platform for people to actually speak about this particular past.
You've talked about running into a woman at a screening, somebody who had just escaped from being enslaved in Abu Dhabi. Is that right? Do I have the story correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Lady was from Kenya and she applied for a job in Abu Dhabi. And yeah, it was identical to how Solomon, was seduced by, Hamilton and Brown, the two characters, to go with him to the circus. It's like a Brothers Grimm dark fairy tale. But unfortunately, it happens today. There are millions. In fact, there are 21 million Solomon Northups out there today. There are more slaves today than there was in 1841 when our story started.
Your film is obviously a period film, but its modern implications, I suspect, are something that you are very interested in having people talk about. Is
Absolutely.
That surprised you in how many of those conversations you're actually having or hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I became a patron of Anti-Slavery International. They're the oldest human rights sort of organization in the world, 175 years old. They were sort of pinnacle to the abolition movement of the transatlantic slavery and are still working today. And it's kind of interesting that when we think of what will happen to Solomon and what we think of happened to millions of African Americans, the same thing, but even worse, is happening today. And we are all implicated in it. And I just don't want there to be a situation where 150 years from now, people are telling a similar story that I told with 12 Years a Slave. I think we can't not be conscious of what's going on.
I want to talk a little bit about what the past 5 or 6 months have been like for you. I had a conversation a year past with Ben Zeitlin, who was doing Beasts of the Southern Wild, and he said when he was talking about the film and trying to promote it, he thought he could do some writing at night, that he would work on other scripts, and he found that all of the energy that he was spending promoting and talking about Beasts of the Southern Wild prevented him from doing any other work. And I'm curious, as an artist, are you able to do anything separate from talking about 12 Years a Slave? Are you able to work on scripts, think about video, do some screenwriting, do some sketching, anything artistic, or has this been all-consuming?
It's kind of all-consuming, I'll be honest. I can think of things in an abstract sense as far as artworks are concerned, because I'm an artist, but not in narrative sense, not. Also, it's just because, yeah, it takes up a lot of time and energy, and you have ideas, but you can't really focus, I'll be honest with you. And the time, the downtime you have, I just want to be with my family, doing homework, taking my kids to school. So it's not just about me.
Well, have you had a chance to do that? I mean, when was the last time you were with your family? How much time have you been able to spend in Amsterdam?
A lot. No, I go home any time, I was there 3 days ago. I go home a lot. No, I don't stay in LA because I've got a life as well as doing this. I mean, again, someone so told me very early on, Steve, this movie is more important than you. It's something, look, I can't say that I'm used to doing this. Absolutely. I've never done this before, but when my friend told me that this movie is more important than you, I totally understood what he meant. And I thought, okay, well, I have to make a commitment, for this film. And it's been extraordinarily rewarding talking to people, having those kind of passionate debates about, where we are now and where we want to be in the future and where, who and what we are as a society, not just here, obviously here in the United States, but in the world, because slavery was a world industry, is a world industry. And it's just it's kind of humbling.
When you say that the movie is more important, does that mean that you have to kind of set aside the other things that are important in your life? I mean, you say you've been able to see your family,
yes,
but what does that mean in practical terms?
There's a certain sacrifice, yes. And I know I've talked to my wife. There's a certain sacrifice, absolutely. Because and I understand the movie is more important than me. And there's a lot of people who have a lot of investment in this, because the story is a story, and I feel that I have to be the spokesman for this movie, and I feel that I have to sort of put myself out there. Yes, I have to sacrifice a bit of my family too, and they understand that. I miss my daughter's birthday, and I said to her, look, darling, this is what this movie is about. This is why I'm doing this. And she totally understood, and she allowed me to go.
So, how old is she?
Well, she's 15. She's 15, so I missed her 15th birthday.
That's a very understanding teenager.
Well, yeah, she's a beautiful girl. She's a beautiful girl.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. John Horn is talking with Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave.
There's been a lot of conversation around Hollywood that I suspect you've heard and people have discussed, and I know it was your intention, that this is a very difficult movie to watch. Is part of your talking about the film getting people comfortable with the idea that it might be difficult, but it's important to watch? Do you still find yourself frustrated by hearing those kinds of comments, that this movie may be too tough for me to experience?
No, because the movie's made $110 million so far. So that proves all the skeptics wrong about it being difficult to watch or people not wanting to watch it, because I think people are interested in viewing challenging movies. I think people are interested in engaging in narratives which reflect them and their past and their history and has a possible effect on their future. I think people are so engaged in this particular narrative, and it's just been incredible and humbling how it has affected people. People are in tears, people are hugging each other, people are affected by it in a way which is sort of yes, at first I thought strange, but on my second thought I thought, well, I understand, because to visualize this time in history is very different from reading about it in some textbook.
Lee Daniels has talked about when he shown even some of his family, the butler, that there were relatives of his that knew nothing about that period of modern American civil rights history. I'm curious, in hearing people talk about this film, are you surprised by how informed or uninformed people are about this period of American history?
Very much. On both sides. It's just I think that people now are curious, obviously, of why. The questions are being asked. Why? And what's so hopeful for me about this whole situation is people are going out. I mean, for example, 12 Years a Slave, the book, it's been on the New York Times bestsellers list for 5 months now. You know, it sold 150,000 copies of it, of the only the Penguin edition. That's not counting the other editions that they are. So people, they're focusing. They're basically going to sort of do their research. They're going to find out about that particular time in history. And it's I mean, there are people who said to me they didn't know it was that bad. But you know, again, one has to sort of be empathetic with those people, just because it's understandable. You know, when do people really talk about slavery? So therefore, we have to be sympathetic to those people in order for them to sort of, you know, learn and find out. And, you know, it's great when people find out something new, or when I find out something new. It's, you know, you grow as a human being. So I'm hoping that a lot of people are doing that now.
You mentioned a little bit ago that the film has grossed more than $100 million. A lot of that money has come from overseas audiences. And there's a theory, a saying in Hollywood that movies about black people don't tend to travel. It's a canard. Clearly, this movie is doing incredible business overseas as well as in the United States. Has that been a surprise to you? Were you warned kind of before the film came out that this was an obstacle, something that you had to overcome in terms of international audiences' willingness to engage in this kind of story?
Well, I think that's baloney. I think that's just absolute baloney. I mean, I don't know what I mean. A good story is a good story. And I think when it's a story of someone who's been taken away from their family, any and everyone could identify with that. So it's not about these people being a darker color so people won't like them, so they won't go to a movie, or people being of a lighter color so they will go and see them. It's absolute, it's a nonsense. And of course, I'm very happy that we've obliterated that sort of whole theory or that whole thinking. It's nonsense.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's credible. I'm just saying it's what everybody says.
Well, that's why I'm saying I'm happy that we obliterated that thinking.
You've talked a little bit about how this is, in your mind, and I think it's true, changed the conversation that some people are having about slavery. Do you think it has changed or affected the conversations that people are having about race in this country?
I hope so. You know, again, I mean, Solomon is like you. He's like me. He's like anyone sitting in that cinema. He's an everyman. You know, when you look at it, when you look at that movie, you're thinking of yourself. You're thinking of, you see what Solomon sees for the first time. So I would hope just by, you know, going through the movies and being part of Solomon's journey that you could identify with him. So therefore, that's a huge sort of recognition of we being, you know, people, we being a family, really.
Are there any comparisons to other movies that you are most proud of? I mean, I know people have said they've compared this movie to Schindler's List. I'm curious, when people reference other films, is there something that a comparison that other people have made where you said that was kind of what I was after?
Well, I remember seeing Schindler's List when it opened on the Upper East Side. I remember I was in New York. I was on my own, and I went to see this movie. And I was sitting in the audience, and when the movie was over, people started to stand up. It was almost like, you know, and say something in Hebrew or whatever it was. And it was so moving. I didn't know what they were saying. People started to stand up and talk. And another gentleman stood up, and a woman stood up. And it was just so, I mean, I'm sort of getting goose pimples thinking about it. It was so profound. You know, yeah, and me, this English guy, experiencing this, it was, you know, again, goodness gracious, I remember winter was cold, and it was still, sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional. It was one of those moments where I thought, wow, the power of cinema, Jesus Christ, what we could do when we, you know, we work together, you know, yeah. Okay. I'm getting a bit emotional. Okay, this cut. All right.
Coming up after a short break, Steve McQueen on why he thinks Hollywood is ready now to tackle the tough subject of slavery. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Ever wish you could hear KCRW's signature music programming wherever and whenever you want? You can with Eclectic 24. Our ever-expanding all-music stream is available worldwide 24/7 online. You can listen to KCRW's diverse music mix on the go or in the car through your iPhone or Android phone app. KCRW's Eclectic 24, where and when you want it. Check it out. Go to kcrw.com/eclectic24.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today, my colleague, John Horn, is talking with director Steve McQueen. His film, 12 Years a Slave, recently won the BAFTA for Best Picture and has 9 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best Director. McQueen has a history of making provocative films that may make audiences uncomfortable, but also asks them to think. His last movie, Shame, was a graphic look at the tortured life of a sex addict. In addition to being a filmmaker, McQueen is an internationally recognized visual artist. His work usually involves video installations or photography. In 1999, he won the Turner Prize, the highest award for an artist in Britain.
I'm curious if the satisfactions or rewards of making a film and having it be as well recognized as this film have been are separate from or similar to the reaction you might have from a piece of visual art, a video installation, where it just kind of goes and you can kind of see people interacting it. You can't measure it by box office or kind of Rotten Tomatoes score.
Mm-hmm.
As an artist, is there a different experience you have in how your work is appreciated in a film compared to a piece of video installation or visual art?
Well, art is more like poetry. I mean, hardly anyone reads poetry. It's a pretty niche, sector of the community. And, you know, it's the same as with art. It's kind of a small minority of people who kind of look at it or appreciate it. And of course, everyone was born sort of knowing a story. Everyone could tell you a story. So narrative is, of course, so much more popular. I mean, again, I think that, you know, for me, feature filmmaking is like the novel. And my artwork is like poetry. You're doing the same things with the same words, but doing them differently. One is narrative, storytelling, once upon a time in the end. The other one is sort of fractured, abstracted, concise. So, I mean, how they appreciate it, yeah, it's just, you know, again, it's just different kinds of groups of people, really.
As John Ridley originally wrote the script, and as I think you originally planned to film it, it was going to be told in a somewhat linear chronological fashion, that we'd start with Solomon being free and then go through his journey. And you decided to take a scene from the middle of the film and put it at the front. Why was that an important choice you made?
Because it was, again, it's just one of those things. It was so kind of obvious in a way. Okay, some guy's free, and then, you know, it was too A, B, C, D. And I liked the idea of going F, B, D, C, A, whatever. Just because it's much more stimulating for the audience. It holds their attention. It asks them questions. And when you ask an audience questions, they kind of like, okay, I think I understand this. And then when they're rewarded with an answer, then they're actually they're looking for another puzzle to solve.
When you started making this movie, you talked rather eloquently about how Hollywood has made a ton of movies about the Holocaust, and it had even made a lot of movies like Spartacus about kind of Roman slavery, mm-hmm. but none about American slavery, or very few. Obviously, this film has come out now, but have you thought more about why that might be and why this period of American history has been so ignored by movie studios?
Well, I think at that time, slavery was a horrendous, violent, vicious, you know, nasty time in history, and understandable people had difficulties sort of coming to terms with it or visualizing it via cinema. Understandable. And I had sympathy for that. And, you know, and also in the black community, people dealing with it, grappling with it, you know, the shame and whatnot. But now I feel people are receptive. I think people now are wanting to engage with that history in order to sort of go forward more than any other time. Possibly because, you know, there's a black president, possibly because last year, you know, when the movie came out, it was the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights March on Washington, and the I Have a Dream speech, the Trayvon Martin incident, voting rights being revoked. So I think people are sort of hungry to engage in that history, and not in the sense of finger pointing, but the sense of, in a way, healing.
No, you get back to kind of the whole idea of truth and reconciliation. And
yes.
The issue with slavery is that we being America, are the antagonists. We are the cause of the trouble.
No.
Whereas in a World War II or a Holocaust film, you can say it's the Nazis or
yes,
something like that.
Yes,
but with American slavery, we are the villain.
Yes, but not alone. There's Britain, there's France, there's the Netherlands, there's Portugal. There's
I'm talking about the universal
we.
There's no other.
But again, you know, but within that sort of scenario, Africans sold Africans, don't forget. You know, so this is a situation where it's not just about sort of us and them. It's about we. And the fact of the matter is, you know, it's a case that we have to talk about this honestly and in a naked and a straightforward fashion. You know, everyone is involved in this. And it's about us holding hands and, you know, and moving forward.
This is a film that's been obviously incredibly well received critically. Mm-hmm. It's been well received commercially. What do you think it will do in terms of changing the kinds of movies that financiers or studios are willing to embrace?
I so hope that the studios understand that people want to see challenging films which are not sort of blockbusters. And I wish they would sort of understand that they actually can make money and they could bring back their mini majors. That would be so healthy for the community of filmgoers, filmmakers, but also it's a different brand of revenue for them. So they can have the big blockbusters, the big movies that cost, you know, $80-100 million, you know, whatever. And also they can have the ones that cost sort of 15, 20, you know, and under, and that make money. Come on, guys. It makes sense. And therefore there's a broader scope of things to see, of choices, and they can make money. I mean, you know, I really hope we can be an example of bringing back that kind of commitment to another kind of filmmaking.
But obviously this movie wouldn't have existed without Bill Pohlad, who financed an independent financier, New Regency. This is not a studio film. You can look at Megan Ellison, who backed her in American Hustle. It feels as if, even though that the fundamental numbers that you're expressing are true, the studios still don't get it, that they're relying on third parties to finance movies like yours.
Well, I think hopefully they will get it now. I think hopefully we can be an example of getting it.
What has been the most gratifying part of seeing this film being received? Is it the box office, the Academy Award conversations, or things you hear people who have seen the film saying?
People. That, you know, it could change people's lives, change people's perspective. I mean, you know, art, movies can actually do that. Crazy, but true. That's been the most satisfying thing. I mean, again, I remember very early on in Toronto, and we showed the film, and a friend of mine, a British producer, was sitting in the audience, and this black lady came in, and she said she had been queuing for a couple of hours, and they had a little chat before the movie started. At the end of the movie, when Solomon sort of comes home, he felt a hand slide across his, and the credits started to roll, and they started to embrace and cry in each other's arms. And that's not at all rare. That was happening in Telluride. That was happening in Toronto. There was a sense of us. There was a sense of community. There was a sense of, you know, that art or movies can actually do that, can actually transcend our everyday. You walk out with a happy heart.
Does this make you feel that you have something more to prove? I mean, you've set the bar so high for yourself in some ways about what a film can accomplish. Does this, in your own mind, make the challenges of your next movie even more profound?
No. I say no. But knowing it will be very hard. No. I'm sort of brainwashing myself. You know what? I think I'm definitely going to take some time off, not to think, and then to come back, because I've made 5 films in 3 years, and with a retrospective in that time, and a brand new baby in that time. So there's been a lot going on. I feel that I just need to take a break and come back, hopefully with something which is sort of, can actually make me have the passion I did when I was making 12 Years a Slave. It's all about the passion. Because at the end of the day, you know, I just feel that, we're going to die. Absolutely. That's not a surprise. But it's all about how we live our lives and how we go out. And I just want to go out with 2 guns blazing. That's all.
Steve McQueen, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting me. Cheers.
That was the business contributor and LA Times writer John Horn in conversation with Steve McQueen, whose film, 12 Years a Slave, is still playing in theaters. And that's the business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can hear the podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, or wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.